Everybody, I'm Pete. This is Reel of Thieves, the show where we go over all the references, riffs, and history and your favorite stuff. And we're continuing our interview series this week with a very, very special guest. This is a man that when I was not really sure if I was going to continue writing and trying to do like anything artistic with my life, kind of fell into my life. He was looking for writers, and my wife actually knows him from back in college. And I was able to submit a writing sample, and that was the beginning of my journey into freelance artistic work where I am today. So I have a lot to thank this man for. He is the editor-in-chief of dorkdaily.com. He is a co-host on the Dork Squad and on Dunkelvision, which is now a new podcast on Anchor, which you can find at a lot of different places at this point, I'm assuming. Everybody, Chris Pierdomenico. Chris, how are you?
Wow, that's a great intro, man. I appreciate that. It's an honor to be here, and I want to point out that, you know, not only have you done amazing content for dorkdaily.com, but you're the reason we're on Anchor. You told me about it, and I, you know, I didn't know what I was doing in the podcasting world, and so you explained it in a way that made sense and that didn't confuse me, and it's been great. I haven't been happier with our podcast, so very cool. I thank you for that, my friend.
That's high praise, as Nick Cage would say. Thank you so much.
Of course.
So I wanted to talk to you today because we're on the sequelitis arc, right, on the show, where we're going to be talking about a lot of different ways sequels go right and sequels go wrong. And one of the things I touch on in the intro to this arc on the sequelitis episode, which if you're listening and you haven't listened to that yet, please go back and listen to it. You'll enjoy it. There is very few multiverses in the independent world, but there is one that's very special to you, that's very influential to you, and that is Kevin Smith's View Askewiverse, which I touched on very briefly in the episode, but I wanted to save just for you and just for this interview, because if anyone's going to be able to do it right, it's going to be you.
That is high praise, too. So I should point out, it's actually the View Askewiverse.
Okay.
And it is, I wouldn't say it's a multiverse, at least not yet. It is more of a cinematic universe. So if we think about the original Marvel Cinematic Universe, it is more along those lines. I wouldn't say that it is a multiverse yet. We don't have a Doctor Strange character yet that has, you know, merged different universes together. But you could argue, because, you know, some of the comics in the Askewiverse are sort of different takes on different events in the movies. So you could argue there is a multiverse of sorts. But I would say it was one of the first major cinematic universes. It was probably the first legit cinematic universe, at least mainstream-wise.
That was done right.
Oh, yeah. You know, Kevin Smith has mentioned that he got his inspiration from John Hughes, who, you know, of course, did Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, 16 Candles. So in those movies, the characters, there's not that many direct references, but the idea is that they all are from the same town, Shermer, Illinois, near Chicago, and that many of them went to the same high school. But it's not like outright said. It's just kind of assumed. Like it's sort of alluded to in some of the films, but it's not right out said. It's said outright. And what Kevin did is he kind of took it a step further, and he connected characters in his different movies. He had kind of common events happen that connected different movies. Certain characters are related to other characters. And he wasn't the first one. He was the first one really to do this in film, but he was inspired by comics. So really it was Marvel that influenced him, Marvel Comics, in having a connected universe. And then, you know, when the Marvel Cinematic Universe came out, folks were like, oh, that Kevin was doing that first. And Kevin was like, well, no, technically Marvel was doing that before me.
I've always felt like he was more of a DC guy, but maybe that's just from the Batfleck kind of thing when Ben Affleck was going more towards Batman and Superman. They were talking about Zack Snyder.
Well, the DC universe, too, is also an interconnected universe. I mean, comics in general have, it was much more common to see that sort of thing happen with storylines and characters cross over, really any kind of comic. And Kevin is a lover of all comics. So I don't think he is kind of one way or the other.
Yeah, I know the first crossover comic was a Batman, Robin, and Superman comic during the Silver Age. That was the first one where they were like, this is all the same universe.
That's cool. I did not know that.
Yeah, I learned that from some of my other research from my other shows, which if you're not currently listening to, I actually have another show. We'll do a quick plug real quick for Breaking Character. You can head that over onto Beams FM and listen to that. I do that twice a day where I break down your favorite characters from your favorite stuff. It's completely free to listen to. You can also find clips and extra content for that show on TikTok at Breaking Character. So when it comes to Clerks, when was the first time you went to see Clerks? Was it in theater? Well, it wasn't in theaters, but it would have been like on video, right?
Yeah, so Clerks came out in 1994. I was nine. I had no concept of it whatsoever. My earliest memory of Jay and Silent Bob was, I think, like my stepdad rented Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back back in 01 or 02. So whenever it came out on DVD.
So that was really your first exposure.
That was technically it was my first exposure. And, you know, I didn't get any of the references. It was just sort of, you know, at the time, the raunchy 90s, 2000s comedy, it was just outrageous. They said the F word a lot. So it was just like, oh, it's a funny, goofy movie. You know, I had no idea that it was the culmination of a cinematic universe. So, you know, I had a buddy in high school, Matt Kelly, over at Geekscape.
Yes, he does. Yeah, there's a Geekscape. It's, there's, what was it? The One Hit Wonders. He's been doing one recently. Yeah, I like his stuff. He's cool.
Do you know Matt?
I'm friends with him on Facebook.
Are you?
So
okay.
So I actually got friends with him. It was like a recommended through you. And I just clicked it because he was, and I was like, oh, he's another podcaster. That's really cool. I've been listening to his stuff. I really like it. That's just a random plug for him.
I've known Matt I've known Matt since sixth grade. He's a really good dude. He's always supported my work. And yeah, so anyway, he had mentioned this Kevin Smith universe type of thing. And he were talking about it in high school. And I'm like, yeah, I'll give it a try. So I remember it was a snowy, we had a snow day in winter 2003, and so we had Blockbuster in town. I'm like, oh, okay. So it was snowing, but it wasn't that bad. So I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go rent a movie. And then I saw Clerks was there, so I'm like, oh, I'll give this a try. Like Matt had recommended it, why not? And when I put it in, you know, I'm watching it on a small TV in my parents' room. I'm like, is it supposed to be in black and white? Like, do I have like the wrong setting? Like, it just was very, like, confusing. And I watched it, and it was at that moment, you know, after I finished watching it, I laughed. I thought it was really insightful. I'm like, wow, it is possible to make a movie. It was such a I've been a storyteller my whole life. Since I was a small child, I've gone from different points of wanting to be, like, a cartoonist or a novelist or a comic book writer. And, like, doing a movie, like, seemed like a cool idea when I was young, but I thought, well, that's just not practical. That's not something that can be done unless, like, you know somebody and you have, like, a huge budget. And I just, it was not something I put a lot of thought into. But then watching Clerks, I'm like, I could do this. You know, it was something that was attainable. And it's like, you didn't have to have a big budget or many locations to make a story that was really compelling, really funny. And so that really hit me deep then. It was a whole realization. I think I want to give this a shot. It's funny because Kevin talks about, he's talked at his live shows and on his podcast that for him, he had this exact same experience with the movie Slackers in the early 90s as he went to see Slackers. And he's like, oh, well, if this counts as a movie, I can do it. So it's just the circle of life, man.
Well, Favreau had very good advice, which was, you know, you write and do around what you have and what you know, what you're capable of using. And those are the pieces of your film, which is a very like new wave way of thinking. Right. And for Kevin Smith to be inspired by that and go, well, I've got this Quickie Mart and do the exact same thing and nail it. I mean, it's a testament to that's what you do. Right. If you use what you have, if it's a basic Lego set that you have, then that's what you work with. And then if you can make magic with that, well, they might throw money at you and you might be able to do something bigger.
Exactly.
Because then all of a sudden that's your resume. It's like, wow, he did that on what? Give him $5 million. See what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I went on after that. I'm like, oh, I gotta see like the other ones in the series. And so I saw, went on to see Mallrats and Chasing Amy and Dogma and then I rewatched Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, which sort of serves as a sequel to all of the movies beforehand, because it has Mallrats and Chasing Amy and Dogma. They have storylines that cross over and characters, especially Jay and Silent Bob are the Greek chorus. They appear in every movie and they're kind of what connects it. But with Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, the film, what was really novel about that is that it brought back pretty much all the main characters from the first four movies, kind of in their own scenes and kind of seeing what they were doing now in short cameos. And that was really, really cool. And I totally missed it the first time I saw it, but it really was kind of brilliant in the end. And it was just really this fun send-off. At the time, that was how Kevin was going to end his View Askew universe, and then he went and he did Jersey Girl. He wasn't totally happy with how Jersey Girl turned out, even though it's a great film. And then he went back to Clerks 2, which he called it Back to the Well or something like that. Like, he kind of embraced, because the thing about Kevin is that he makes fun of himself before any of the critics can make fun of him. He's like, yeah, I am going back to the well. So what? I like the well.
It's a good well. It's got good water.
It's a good well. Yeah, that's exactly what he said back then. And so he did Clerks 2. And then since then, he's done a bunch of different movies. He came back again to the View-esque universe with Jay and Silent Bob Reboot back in, I believe it was 2019, which is a sequel to Strike Back, essentially. And now we got Clerks 3 coming out later this year. So in total, that should be about like 8 View-esque universe like live action films, not including comics and cartoons. I know he wants to do a Mallrats sequel, which, you know, has kind of been in various stages of being greenlit. I'm not sure exactly what's happening, but it sounds like it eventually is going to happen.
Yeah, I tried to actually try out for extra for that Mallrats movie when they were trying to shoot around both. There was a mall near Riddle, Concord Mall. Granite Run, that's it. And then the Exton Square Mall, they were looking at that for a little bit, and I was like, I could walk there.
Yeah. Well, no, I grew up at Granite Run Mall. That was 10 minutes from my house as a kid, so I spent a ton of time.
Yeah, see me, it was Exton.
Oh, nice. And Exton's a nice mall, too, and I was so psyched when they said they were going to do it there, but it kind of fell through. I think they were knocking down Granite Run Mall, so I think that the schedule just didn't work.
Yeah, and now Exton just got sold. I mean, what's kind of happening with Mallrats is they're running out of time, and they're running out of malls.
Right, which it's funny because they allude to that in Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, because again, they bring back some of the characters. They bring back the star of Mallrats, and you know, he has this comic book shop in the mall that's like completely empty. So yeah, I mean, Kevin has always rewarded people that have stuck with him from the beginning. As far as the viewers, he always has kind of found ways to, I mean, he said it himself that he's in the business of selling Kevin Smith, and he's always been really, really good with the fans that have always loved his stuff.
I love that you said Greek chorus, because that's exactly what Jay and Silent Bob are in even in Clerks 1, that's what they are. They're really on the outside, really just kind of there. For me, the first exposure was Dogma.
Okay.
And that's really the one where I have the most love, because I'm a struggling, recovering Catholic. So there's a lot there for me to dig into for the church, for like the rules and regulations. But it is, in a lot of ways, a love letter to Catholicism. It's really like, let's go back to kind of the root of where we came from.
Yeah.
And instead of trying to like turn into this other thing, which has kind of been the problem.
I love Dogma. Yeah.
And Matt Damon and Ben Affleck in that are fantastic as those angels of death and destruction. And the boardroom scene is my favorite. I'm probably the most basic person in the world for saying that, but that boardroom scene is, oh my God, you didn't say bless you when I sneezed.
You know, what's funny is a great scene. They almost cut that from the movie.
What?
That was almost cut because it technically didn't really fit in with like the main narrative of Bethany going to New Jersey. And, you know, so it was kind of like its own scene that didn't connect necessarily to the other scenes, but it's such a good scene.
You're right.
I'm so glad they kept it in, because it's memorable. You never forget that.
No, but it also really shows their characters, right? And it also shows that one of them actually does have a bit of a limit.
Yeah.
Yo, wait a second. Let's hang on. And it really alludes to what's going to happen later on in the movie. So that's really the biggest argument for that scene, is that it's such a nice little seed that later on when you see the end, you're like, oh.
Yeah. I love the scene. I'm glad. I think they probably felt it was a bit long, but it's a great scene. Although I'd have to say
it is a bit long.
I'd have to say my favorite scene is the parking garage, where Matt Damon and Ben Affleck's characters are debating, basically arguing about why God was better to humans than angels. And it is brilliant writing. I think maybe one of his best written scenes ever, I would say, is that parking garage scene. You know, it still gives me chills when I watch it.
That is a very powerful scene. That is really. And I think that makes a lot of sense for some of the projects that you've done and worked on that we've talked about. And I can see why that really resonates with you. Now, with kind of like Clerks 1 and Clerks 2, how do you feel about movies versus The Store?
Well, I mean, so you have seen Clerks 2?
Yes, I've seen all of Clerks 2. I've seen pieces of Clerks 1. Really, my exposure is Dogma, Jay and Silent Bob, Strike Back, and Clerks 2. Those are my three.
Well, I would say that the Quick Stop is iconic. The Quick Stop is, and so is Movies. Movies is also, I mean, when we went to Rhode Island Comic Con, I mean, there was literally
that was
a pop-up.
So good.
Yeah,
it
pop-up
was
movies.
So good.
Really great food. You know, so I'd say they're both iconic, but, you know, the whole premise of the Clerks 2 movie is getting back to the Quick Stop.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of where it leads. I mean, the Quick Stop burns down and they spend kind of the whole movie figuring out, hey, you know what was a lot better than this place was the Quick Stop. So I would say, I think it was cool to see them outside of that location, but I would say that, like, it's... I don't want to say, almost has like a, there's a sacredness, if you will, to the Quick Stop, I think, because it was where everything started. I think sacred for the characters and for the fans. And that was sort of always, Clerks 2 did a really good job of using the Dante character and the Randall character to contrast like views on that. Because Dante would look back at his time at the Quick Stop, like in one of the opening scenes, they drive by the burned down Quick Stop, and what does he say? Dante says something like, boy, I'm so glad we're done with that place, or you know, he calls it a hellhole. So what he does, he's like, you know, the Lord smited that hellhole, and Randall's the one that's hanging on to the memories of basically everything that happened from Clerks 1 onward, because it's a 10-year gap there. And Randall looks back at it like, hey, that was one of the best times of my life. I got to hang out with my best friend, watch movies, insult customers. I mean, it was a very innocent...
And get paid for it.
Get paid for it, yeah. It was a very innocent time. And Dante is the one that is resisting going back to it. He's like, I finally got out of the Quick Stop because it was such a menial... Yeah, I think if you look at the first one, I mean, he was miserable. The entire first movie, he complains about, you know, I'm not even supposed to be here today. And it's such a negative thing. And I think it plants the seeds for Clerks 2. And Kevin didn't know it at the time, I'm sure. But it really sets up a great interaction dynamic with Dante and Randall, where, you know, one of them really wants to go back to, you know, their childhood in a way, and the other person wants to move on. And then they find a way to compromise, which I think is really, really cool, in that they go back to the Quick Stop, but now they're going to run the Quick Stop. So in a way, it's like Dante's dream of kind of running his own business, being in charge of his life, pays off. Randall gets to be part of that while still going back to the store. And it's a win-win for everybody. You know, it's not like they're just going back to work under some boss they don't like. Mm-hmm. And so I thought especially the ending in Clerks 2 is so good. I love when when I was in the theater, I saw it and they're pulling the camera back when they're playing the Soul Asylum song, which the first Clerks movie ends with a Soul Asylum song. The second one also ends with a different Soul Asylum song, Misery. And it fades to black and white. And it's just like, it's almost like right out of the first movie. I got a little misty-eyed when I saw it for the first time. I just think that, you know, Clerks 2 did a great job of bringing it full circle.
For me, I feel like Clerks 2 is his kind of... excuse kind of the expression, right? So Clerks really is like his intro. This is my young boy, I'm proving myself film. This is my early 20s film. Yeah. Clerks 2 is my midlife crisis film, right? Like, yep. I'm trying to be an adult. And he's also kind of looking back because Dante and Randall are really kind of – I know Dante's supposed to be him in a lot of ways, but I feel like Randall's also a piece of him.
Oh.
Right?
A thousand percent, yeah.
Like, I feel like they're just both like the left and right side of his brain at the end of the day, yelling at each other. And really what this shows is an outward expression of a midlife crisis where it's like, hey, don't you want to go back to being a kid? And like, and he's like, no, I want to grow up. I want to be an adult now. That's what I'm supposed to do. And he's like, but we're not really grown up because instead of working there, we're working at a fast food joint.
Right. Right. Just the cycle continues.
Yeah. It's a wheel of samsara.
And I feel like in the first Clerks movie, Dante is more Kevin. I think when Kevin wrote Clerks 1, I think he saw himself more as Dante. I think that was very clear.
He was very cynical when he was younger.
But then when you go to Clerks 2, I think he definitely is more Randall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he lost his cynicism. He like battled it and won, which I think is really the grand battle of anybody as they get older is like, how do I beat this nihilism of life?
Yeah.
That I'm getting, or it's like, oh, it's just, this is the main cycle of all I do. And what's kind of the point of it? And what I love about Randall is the point of it is that I have my friends. The point of it is that I have these moments.
Yeah.
And I have to be here now and enjoy them because they're going to go away. And that's kind of what he learns when the quick stop goes away is, one day this might go away. Mm-hmm. And he's still holding on to that nostalgia. But Randall's just like, he was so miserable. All he thinks about, like you said, is all the negative crap. I wasn't supposed to be there. How many times was he not supposed to
Dante,
be there?
Dante, you mean?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, Dante.
Yeah.
And sorry. But yeah, it was definitely a situation where, I don't know. I feel like Clerks 3 is going to have that, like, we're really old now kind of feel. Like, wait a second. Like, was I supposed to do more? Like, I was happy. I found happiness. But was that happiness okay? Or was that happiness adequate? Or should I have had that different life? I still think that's going to be there. And that's something that we all have to reckon with later on, that we'll have to reckon with, you know, sooner than later, which is like, hey, is this what we really wanted?
Oh, yeah.
But it's really reassuring to me to see that within kind of the context of all these other films, right, that this, what was his most personal film, is this personal journey of his experience of life that he's sharing with his fans, going like, no, I feel the exact same thing you're feeling.
Yeah.
It's just, it's in a different context, you know? I mean, I think there's plenty of people, even in the entertainment industry, that'd be like, I wish I would have had a family sooner, or I wish I would have said no to that one, or I wish I would have da-da-da-da-da. Like, those kinds of lifetime regrets are completely universal. Everybody's living a life that they didn't actually want.
Wow.
In some aspects. Some days they wake up and they're like, this isn't really what my dream was.
Yeah.
But if they sit back and realize what they have, if they really look back and go, wait a second, they'll realize that they have more than they possibly could have imagined, because that dream was really superficial. It's kind of like the prince in Tangled. Have you ever seen Tangled?
Oh yeah.
I watch a lot of kids' movies.
Yeah, I saw it a while ago. Yeah.
So it's like, so Rapunzel's like, I have all of these different dreams and aspirations in this bar scene.
Right. I love that bar scene. Great scene.
And what is the prince? It's like, I want a land full of money and it's just me. And they're like, that's a shit dream. And when he realizes, like, wait, that wasn't a really good dream. My real dream is like, to like be happy and have a person in my life and have connections with people and like da 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 da, like
right.
That's really what it turns into. That's really what I feel like is growing up, you know. And I love that Kevin Smith is doing it in his own way, and we get to have a bunch of dick jokes with it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think a lot great stories are like that, where the protagonist thinks they want something, you know. And I hate to break down stories like this because I feel like it makes it seem like I'm saying they're formulaic. I don't think they're formulaic, but there is a structure you can see, mm-hmm. where protagonists thinks they want A, they sort of get A, but realize that what they wanted was B, which they had all along. I mean, that's extremely common in so many, especially, you know, cinematic storytelling. Mm-hmm. But I think it's certainly, if it wasn't relatable, they wouldn't make so many films about it. You know, how many of us have...
Yeah.
What have dreamed? I mean, I dreamed of having a job I really wanted, and I was crushed when I didn't get it. But then I realized I had something even better, you know. And I think that people can apply that to so many different areas of their lives. So
yeah, I mean, for me, like when I started trying to do independent filmmaking in Philly, and I was like running cables and like working for cigarettes and pizza, basically, and like the credit on the DVD that I might get in the mail, maybe.
Wait, you got cigarettes. It used to be only pizza and credit. I didn't know they were giving cigarettes
away
now.
No, you got to just sweet talk certain people, and you can bum some here and there, and then at the end of the day, you got a half a pack.
See, I don't smoke, so it wouldn't do anything for me. But
I'm from Delco. I had to a little bit.
Yeah, I avoided that somehow.
I don't know how you did it. I don't know how. I guess maybe it's because I was closer to Newtown Square. Were you closer to Newtown Square?
No, I grew up in Aston, you know.
Man, how did you not start on L&M's at 9?
Honestly, I think
you've got
the
willpower of a samurai, my dude.
I had asthma, and I never had a desire.
God bless you.
I've had plenty of bad habits, but I'm like, you know what? I've never smoked a cigarette. That's something I can hang on to. So I'm like, okay, I have this. Great. You know, no judgment to anyone that does, but you know, I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna.
Oh, quitting smoking was the best thing I ever did.
Well, good. I'm glad for your health. For that reason, it's not good for your health, but yeah, that's fine.
Oh God, no, and not good for the wallet anymore either. Good Lord,
seriously.
Speaking of cigarettes, I know this is a very odd transition. But there's actually a really great segue here.
I was going to say.
To Tarantino's a little bit. Because there are like little mini brands of stuff here, right? In Smith's universe.
There are.
Yeah. So let's go over a little bit. Why? Now, is it really just a copyright thing? Is that why you start with these kinds of brands? Like, I can have this in my movie and I can do this and it's a commentary, but it's also like a way for me to have this happen?
Yeah. I mean, I think initially it's a way to avoid copyright. So I don't know if you know this, but in movies, what they'll have to do if they're filming like in a store or something and there's a lot of like products, what they'll have to do is something called gaffing. I hope I'm saying that right. Gaffing, where they will like cross out, black out like some of the letters of a product. So let's say it's like a movie store, like you would block out some of the letters of like a movie poster or something because you don't have permission to use it. And I've actually seen this done on TV where like I saw like a Cheez-Its box was altered or something like that. So it certainly is easier to kind of have your own brand, and it's, you know, there's a satirical element. So of course the cigarettes in Kevin Smith's universe are called nails, like nails for your coffin, which is hilarious. I don't remember when I don't know if it was Dogma or Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, because it certainly wasn't like in Clerks 1 where they had that.
It makes sense that it would be in Dogma.
I guess it would be. Yeah, it would make sense. I don't recall when that started, but of course, like, you know, Clerks 2, they bring it back and everything. And it's also just kind of this fun way to connect stuff. So like they're starting brands in the, you know, the Viewsk universe. And, you know, Tarantino did it too with Big Kahuna Burger. You know, he has his own cinematic universe too. Like some of the characters, what is the guy's
name? The cigarettes
name?
There are Lucky Apples instead of Lucky Strikes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, let me get a pack of apples.
Yeah, he does it. He was a little more subtle about it, Tarantino. It wasn't as outright, but you know, the connected universe is a big thing for Kevin Smith fans. So I think just to see, you know, something like Movies that started in Dogma, you know, have that great scene with the Movies board scene.
Or Chulies.
Or Chulies. Well, Chulies, Clerks 1, of course. I believe they brought it back for a reboot. I don't think it was around too much.
Yeah, but Chulies is coming back in a big way for Clerks 3, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, they got the guy. They got Scott Schiaffo, the Chulies Gumbreck. You know, my buddy. Which I was so excited
He's
for
such
him.
Such a nice guy.
Oh, yeah. No, Scott's a good dude. He's a really, really good dude. I was really, I'm going to plug myself here. If you check out our interview on Dunkelvision with Scott Schiaffo, we talk about the moment he found out he was going to be in Clerks 3, because he and Marilyn Gigliotti, who plays Veronica, and Brian O'Halloran, who plays Dante, were doing a Wizard World online panel of some type, because we were all home for the pandemic. And so they're, you know, they commonly appear together and answer questions at panels at conventions. It's a pretty regular thing for them to do. And then out of nowhere, like Kevin Smith and Jay Muse pop on the call. Nobody knew they were showing up, which was, and I just, you know, I'm sitting home watching this happen, and I'm seeing Scott and Brian and Marilyn look like shocked. And Kevin, you know, jumps in and he's like, everybody on this screen is going to be in Clerks 3, which was so cool. And just to see, because we knew, we knew Brian was obviously going to be in it. He had said Marilyn was going to be in it, but to see Scott light up was really, really cool. And just knowing those guys, it was really cool as a fan to witness that, but also just as like a friend to kind of witness, you know, this happening for them, which was really a surreal experience, but very cool.
So cool. And then honestly, like, you can always say like, oh, they were acting and blah, blah, blah. But you know these people.
Yeah.
Personally,
yeah, I know.
For years, you know when they're pretending and when they're really doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, Scott was the one that wasn't. Yeah, I think that was the wild card because it's such an obscure character in the first one. But he's a very, very memorable character. He's the second character we see aside from Dante, which is really, really cool. So, you know, I'm thrilled for Scott that, you know, all these years later, like, he still has so many fans and that he got to go back to where it started. You know, I know he had a ball.
I want to talk a little bit about Rhode Island Comic Con as well.
Yes, please. By the way, I could not have done that without you, sir. You did phenomenal camera work. And
thank you.
I didn't know what I was going to do. I mean, we were trying to get Brian Dunkelman out here and that kind of fell through. We weren't able to do that.
There was a lot of people there. I remember there were so many people that were excited. There were so many cosplayers and artists and everybody. And we're running around to all these different conferences, all these different things. We thankfully got to sit down together for the kind of a view askew of the Clerks panel.
Yeah.
Essentially, where they had Clerks 1 and 2 there.
Yeah.
Together. Yeah. And go on Dork Daily. We have interviews with basically the whole cast, like a lot of major players from Clerks 1 and 2, including, I forget Randall's real name.
Jeff Anderson, the elusive Jeff Anderson. Jeff Anderson.
We actually have an interview with him, which is, it's hard to remember his real name because he barely talks to people.
Yeah, that was, you know, Jeff is one of those guys that he jokes about it. Like, he's like, I'm like the cicadas. I come out every 18 years, you know, to do a Clerks movie. Then I go back into hiding. He is a guy that just loves living his life outside of the entertainment industry. I think he just started doing the cons back in 2020 when COVID hit. And he seems to really like that. He's like, people are so nice to me. So how could I not love doing this? But I mean, he's not a guy that likes acting. He's like, when I'm done here, I'm going home and I'm sitting down and watching TV.
he was like a salt of the earth kind of dude. Like, he literally came across as just somebody we just like met at the conference, like randomly at a restaurant out of everyone.
Yeah.
Like, he was the most natural out of everyone. And I can see why Kevin wants him and stuff, because that is so hard to find.
Yeah, it was very surreal because Jeff is, I had never met Jeff before. Like, I've met a lot of the other cast members. I didn't know Jeff before. And just to kind of sit there and talk to him, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm sitting here hanging out with Randall. Like, it was really, it was really cerebral. You know?
Oh my God. Yeah, it really was.
It was fun. He was a great dude.
What are you most excited about for Clerks 3? Is there anything that maybe you would like to go over where we heard about at the conference or you've heard about since then that you're like, oh, I can't wait for this, or I heard a rumor about this person maybe?
What am I most excited about? I mean, in talking to everybody, like talking to the cast after they filmed, they were very tight-lipped. They didn't say anything. You know, they have seen a rough cut of the movie, which was really cool. And just to hear the genuine excitement that each of them has for this, you know, because anytime you do the third installment of something, like, you know, it's taking a big chance, right? Like doing a threequel, but just kind of hearing the joy of the cast members talking about just how much fun they had and, you know, these really meaningful emotional moments. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking to just see everybody back at the store, because this takes place almost entirely at the store, and kind of reliving some of those moments I had watching the first one for the first time. You know, I'm looking for that, which I think they're really going to nail.
That's awesome. Do you have anything you have to plug? The floor is yours, my dude.
Oh.
Do you have anything coming up really exciting? You're like, oh, we've got this coming up. We got that coming up. We've got these shows.
So check out anchor.fm/Dunkelvision because you can listen to all 7 of our interviews that have been posted. Dunkelvision is a show I produce and co-host, hosted by Brian Dunkelman, who you may remember from American Idol. We talked to just random people you remember watching on TV or in the movies growing up, or people that were involved in some way. We had a really great interview a week ago with one of the writers of the Sonic movie, Pat Casey, which I was I was really surprised that we were able to get him the week his movie came out. Like that Friday, we got him.
That was clutch.
And so that was really cool. He could totally tell he's a fan. He's a fan of Sonic. Like I love now that we live in an age that we have actual fans of the source material writing the film adaptations, which is really cool. We've come a long way since the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, we talked to all sorts of people. We talked to La Bamba from the Conan show. We talked to Nick Bakay, who played Salem the Cat on Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and he was Norbert on Angry Beavers. He produces Young Sheldon now. So all sorts of people.
He's a producer on Young Sheldon?
Yeah, executive producer.
Oh my, I had no idea. That's fantastic.
Yeah. He's more behind the scenes now. He's not really, like, he started as an actor, but even on Sabrina, he was writing and producing, I think, more so. Well, he was in every episode, I guess, as Salem, but he's
was Sabrina's
more...
Rod Sterling?
I guess so. Yeah,
I had no idea. That's fantastic. That's why you need to listen to the show, people.
I gotta tell you, Brian and I, every time we finish talking to somebody, we're like, I can't believe that they talked to us. Like, it just is so, like, we're so humbled that, you know, these folks want to talk to us. But it's always a fun experience. And we also post clips of this on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/dorkdaily, where you can see video clips of the interviews, as well as just movie reviews that we do. Basically, anytime anything nerdy comes out, we got it covered. And I also want to plug dorkdaily.com. Peter's got some awesome articles on there.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah. Awesome stuff and very, very engaging content, which I appreciate, because it's been a while since I've done an article on my own. And it's so great to have you and other content creators. And for a while, you were kind of our only one for about, like, a couple years, I think. So I appreciate that.
And it was a damn honor and a privilege, sir.
Well, likewise. Honor and privilege to have you aboard, sir.
And it was amazing to have you here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're officially my most famous guest.
Oh. I don't know what that says.
It says a lot. You're doing amazing work, and I wish you even more success. 1,000% more success, 10,000, 100,000, because you're a very good person. You're a very good man, and you deserve it. So,
thanks, buddy.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you. You're awesome, and would love to come back anytime. Anytime you need to talk Kevin Smith stuff, let me know.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Yeah. And we will see you next time on Reel of Thieves, everybody. See you soon.